doing Pirkei Avot with the Jewish Omer up to what's called the third chapter, the 14th Mishnah. And in some editions, this is the third chapter, the 18th Mishnah. We're continuing with quotes from Rabbi Akiva. Hu haya omer? He used to frequently say, Chaviv Adam, how cherished is man, Shenivra Betzelem, that he was created in God's form. And this sentence has different commentaries translating it differently. Some commentaries say God made known to him an extra love in creating him in his fashion, as the verse says, "Shineemal ki b'tzelem Elokim asa et Adam," for God made man in his form. And we'll finish the Mishnah and then we'll analyze it with depth. Chavivin Yisrael shenikru banim lamakom, cherished are Israel, for they are called sons before the Omnipresent. Chibay teranu dat lehem shenikru banim lamakom, exceptional love was shown to them that they were called sons before the Omnipresent, as the verse says, Shenemah banim atem lashem elokechem, your sons to Hashem, your God. Chavivin Yisrael shenitan lehem kli chemda, cherished are Israel, that they were given a cherished vessel. An exceptional love was shown to them that they were given this cherished vessel that was used to create the world. Shneimar, as the verse says, "Ki lekach tov natati lachem torati al ta'azovu." I have given you a good teaching, do not leave my Torah. So Hashem says, I have given you a good teaching, I have given you the Torah, do not leave it. And so, in a nutshell, our Mishnah says, the human being is cherished before Hashem. He created him in his fashion. The Jewish people are cherished. They are called sons before Hashem. And they are exceptionally cherished as they were given the Torah. There's another understanding in this line, Noda'at lo, and that is that God showed an exceptional love in that he made them know that he created them in his form. Meaning God could have created us in his form and not told us. But he did tell us, and in telling us, he showed us an extra love. Meaning, we can give a gift, and then we can express to the other side that we've given a gift. The Talmud tells us an interesting line. It says, if someone wants to give bread to a child, let his parents know that you've given him bread. How do you do it? Well, if you give him a bar of chocolate, smear some chocolate on his cheeks, his parents see it. If you give him bread, so put some crumbs so his parents see it. And if not that, so put some oil around his eye and put some eyeshadow on him. He'll come home, his parents will say, wait, who did that to you? What's going on? So he'll say, oh, I bumped into so-and-so, and he also gave me bread, and he fed me and took good care of me. And then the parents will find out about it. Otherwise, kids can come home and they don't tell their parents anything about what happened in their day. This way, the parents will know that you did them a favor. So, of course, when it comes to charity, we prefer to do it in hiding. But when it comes to a favor, something that's not charity, that the person isn't embarrassed at receiving that favor, you know, you take your neighbor's son and you give him lunch because he's not home, your neighbor's going to be thankful, hopefully. So then we should share with the other person what we did on their behalf. So the Talmud teaches us this concept. The Talmud says we learn this concept from God himself. That when it came time to give the Shabbos to the Jewish people, God called Moshe Rabbeinu in a fashion that we don't find with regard to any other mitzvah and said, I want you to go tell the Jewish people, Lechem Orlem, go tell them. So our sages say, what was he supposed to tell them? The mitzvah of Shabbos they'd hear about. Our sages say, God said to Moshe, go tell them I have a good gift for them. What's the gift? Neshama Yaseira. I'm giving them together with the Shabbos something that they might not see. That extra spirit, that capacity to take a day off and really enjoy it. You tell the average guy, take a day off, don't work, don't answer phones, don't plow, don't harvest, don't do anything, just sit at home. So the guy's going to go crazy. He's gonna, one time, twice, three times, every week. The only way you could do that is if Hashem helps you do that. Otherwise, you feel like you're not being productive. The human being gets very tired of not being productive. When a person has a neshama yaseira, that Chazal says a gift Hashem gave us, that we have the capacity to rest on Shabbos and reach spiritual heights. So we learn a concept here. The concept is that you can sometimes give someone something, they don't know about it, better let them know about it, because that That promotes goodwill in Am Yisrael. That promotes companionship. That promotes understanding. Now, this concept applies very often in marriage. Very often, spouses do things for one another, and they don't let the other one know, and they expect the other one to understand. Don't you know how much I cooked for you? Don't you know I cleaned up the whole house for you? Didn't you tell me you wanted me to make you your mother's pot roast? You know how hard I worked just to make you what you wanted? And then the husband is like, well, it didn't come out like my mother's, right? The husband is sheepish, like, I said thank you, it was yummy, thank you. Husbands and wives have to learn how to do this wisely. Meaning, you don't have to make her feel like she's an invalid. I cleaned up the house and I took care of the kids and I did everything you had to do so you could stay in bed and do nothing today. Some wives might not appreciate to hear that. You could say a line like, I know how important it was for you to have the house clean and I know how hard you work and I know how much you wanted to do it, but you were totally wiped and I was hoping it would make you happy, so I got up extra early and I did it. You could say, you're so precious to me and I wanted to make you happy because your happiness is the most important thing to me in the world, and that's why I went by that store where I knew they might sell what you were looking for and I picked it up for you. You understand? There's a way of saying it that says, I did you a favor, I want you to be appreciative. There's a way of saying it that says, I love you, I cherish you, and I want you to understand that because of how I feel about you, I went out and did it. Those are two different lines. Our goal here isn't to receive appreciation. Our goal, says Rashi on that Gemara, and that's the concept that we're taught. Our goal is to get the other side to appreciate how much we cherish them. And very often we could get a gift and we don't think of how to express it correctly. We could go to great lengths to do something to make the other side happy, and then both sides are frustrated. The one who invested all the strength is frustrated because I tried so hard. Why don't you appreciate it? And the one who received it doesn't begin to understand. I always tell the story about the husband who gets up and leaves early in the morning, and the house is all neat, and the kids are in bed, and everything's calm and quiet, and he has a long day at work, and he goes to work. And the wife gets up, and the first thing she finds is that one kid threw up. She goes to clean that up. The second kid who's being toilet trained makes all over the floor. The third kid goes and takes out the milk and tries pouring himself a bowl of cereal, and there's milk all over the floor. Now two kids are fighting. That's mine, it's mine, it's mine, it's mine, it's mine, it's mine. No, it's mine. And they knock down a flower pot. Okay, the house that he left all neat is all filthy. Not only is it filthy, the children are all a mess. The beds they were in are all a mess. There's vomit on this one who wasn't toilet trained, got that one all dirty. Okay, she cleans this one, she cleans that one, she goes to the next one, she feeds them, she takes them out. She comes back, she cleans up, she does the laundry, she hangs out the laundry to dry, she takes it, she sets the bed. The kids come back home, another fight, another spill, another kid to clean up. This kid pulls out that one's hair, this one puts a knife into that one's stomach, takes him to the hospital, takes him, gets him stitched. Okay, not a knife into his stomach, but what happens if we put a pencil up your nose? Let's just try. Oh boy, okay. Okay, now we go to the doctor, we check it out. The other kid says he has an earache. We go back to the doctor, we take that one out, we bring the kids back home, we feed them, we put them back to bed, we clean up the house again, we put away all the food, and the kids are back in bed sleeping calmly. The wife has had a harrowing day. All the yelling of the kids, all the fighting, all the screaming. The husband comes home. Everyone's back in bed. Everything's neat. Everything's quiet. Everything's calm. And the wife is at her wit's end. She just had a terrible day. She didn't have a minute to herself. She's sitting down catching her breath. And the husband walks through the door. And what does he see? He sees the same scene he left in the morning. When he left, everything was organized. When he comes back, everything was organized. When he left, the kids were calmly in bed. When he comes back, the kids are calmly in bed. What does he know what went on the whole day? So he looks at her, and she's sitting there trying to catch her breath. And he puts down his knapsack and says, boy, did I have a hard day today. She's not interested in hearing that. And he's wondering, why isn't she making me something hot to drink? Why are you so white? Everything's so calm here, right? Why do you look so white? And that's in a good way. Husband could easily say, seems like you had a very nice day today, right? Everything's calm. Everything's organized. And that's a small example, but it's a very common example. I was once by a couple just before we were about to have our firstborn. And the wife shared with us the following story the first time they brought their first child home. So that night, the child started crying. So she asked her husband to rock the child to sleep. So the husband took the child out of the crib, sat with the child, and promptly fell asleep. And she saw that her husband couldn't be trusted with the baby. So she said, never mind, put her back in. So they put the baby back in, the baby gets up, he goes back to bed, she gets up, she deals with the baby all night long. The baby is wailing and she's trying to nurse it, trying to put it back to sleep. After spending the whole night not being up, she finally gets the baby to burp and eat, burp, be quiet, and puts it back in bed. And she goes, lies down in bed as her husband gets up. So she's been up all night, and the husband gets up, sees the baby calmly in bed, sees her calmly in bed. He says, what a good, quiet baby we have. She blew a gut, but what did he do? He didn't understand. And this happens often between couples, that one side really invests a lot for the other side, and the other side has no clue. And it's not their fault. So we have to be smart. One way in which people try to get the other side to appreciate is by kvetching, complaining, whining. You know how hard I worked today? That's not the way you're going to get it. Be positive. Share with your spouse how much you care about them and how much you're trying for them. Whatever it is you're doing for them, it's truthfully for them. I'm not talking about the husband who says, I just bought all this meat for you, I just bought all the food, all the bread for you. Like one wife said, no, bring it back to the store, I don't need it. What do you mean you did it for me? But when you really do something for the spouse, so then one of the things that Chazal teaches us is that the Torah wants us to have appreciation for one another, and we can't have it if we don't share it with one another. But here we have to know how to do it wisely. And the Mishnah tells us that Hashem did it with us. Hashem didn't just create us in His fashion. Hashem told us He created us in His fashion. Why is that so important? We should recognize the love Hashem has for us. And here we see the next important point. Sometimes you could love someone and they won't recognize it. And you could love them to death and they still won't recognize it. You have to be smart in showing them that you love them. It's not enough that you love your spouse. You have to know how to show them that you love them in a way that they can accept it. And this takes talent. It requires learning. It takes a certain wisdom in being able to show the spouse how much you're doing for them in a way that doesn't make them feel guilty. You're not trying to put them down, like we said in the beginning. Expressing in a positive way, being able to say the positive, which brings us to the third point. Men very often find it hard to say mushy things. You know, the line I just said, all of you might be smiling at, but most people will find it unnatural. I'm going to tell her that line because I love you so much and I cherish you so much. Yeah, if I give a class, I could say it. But to come home and say it, it's not so easy. It's like most people can't tell their parents, I love you. You can tell your kids, but it's hard to tell your parents. It's something to work on. We should realize it's a weakness, and it's a talent we should acquire. And that brings us to the fourth point. Sometimes people refuse to receive from their fellow men. There are people who only know how to give. But when someone else tries to give them, they don't know how to receive. I don't need it, don't bother me. It's not good. It's not good because you're not letting the other person love you. It's not fair. It's not fair. If you want a real relationship, you have to be able to give with love and receive with love. One of the areas we see it sometimes is with compliments. You compliment people and they don't know what to do with themselves. What are they going to say? So they either argue with you or they make fun of what you just said. And they're trying to be gracious and they're not doing it well. So a person has to think and ask himself, wait a second, what's fair? This person just tried to help me. The Talmud tells us that there is a very important halacha. You want to engage a woman, you want to get married, you have to give her something. You can't get married without giving her something of a certain value. Talmud tells us that there are people who are so important that when you give them something, it's as though they've given you something. There was a person who went out and bought a telephone. And he went to Rav Shlomo Zalman and he said, I want you to have this phone. I want to be able to say that all the questions that Klal Yisrael asks you are answered through the phone that I purchased for you. And the guy was very proud that he gave Rav Shlomo Zalman his first phone. There are people of importance that if they'll accept your gift, that's a big sign. It shows something. And the Talmud says that the people of such importance, so you could have a situation where a man will engage the woman with the pleasure that she has that he was willing to accept the gift from her. You got to be a pretty big shot for that, right? But there are people like that. It depends on him. Sometimes it's gava. Very often it's gava. More often I would say it's gava than anava. The person wants to give me, so let me give him the good feeling that he gave me something. Let me say thank you. I sometimes have people who bring me a gift to the Shabbos table that's not kosher. What am I supposed to do? Or at least I wouldn't say it's not kosher, but doesn't have kosher certification. So the guy came for a meal and they wanted to do something nice. So they bring a bottle of wine. What can I do? The bottle of wine doesn't have a hechsher. Something they brought in from France, something they brought in from I don't know where. So I don't want to drink it, but I definitely want to get excited. I want to give them the good feeling. So sometimes what I do is when we have gerim here whose parents are not Jewish, I say, give it to your parent. Your parent's visiting you. Whenever a gerim's parent comes to visit them, I give them the stuff that I got that doesn't have a hechsher. Let them make their parent happy. Why not? The person's not Jewish. He could drink it and enjoy it. I'm not going to drink it. But the first thing is to say thank you very much. This is so special. I have to say it for a special occasion. This is amazing. And then I get all excited and I show my wife and I show everyone around. What I'm really doing as I'm getting excited is I'm looking. Maybe there's a hechsher I missed. But at the end of the day, he wanted to do me a favor. My responsibility is to be gracious. And I've seen many a marriage get stuck beyond moving forward because one of the sides is not willing to accept, is not willing to receive. And when we're not willing to receive, what we're really saying is, I'm not willing for you to love me. Because in Hebrew, the word love is ahava. The root of ahava is hav, to give. We describe love as the capacity to give. When we talk about marriage, we call it nisu'in. What does nisu'in mean? Lisa means to uplift. Nisu'in means the mutual uplifting. So what does that mean? I get married so I get uplifted? No. I get married so I lift her on my shoulders. And she lifts me on her shoulders. Nisuin means we're mutually taking one another on our shoulders. So if there's capacity to build, that means there's capacity to give. And when you tell someone, I don't want you to give me anything, don't give me anything. There was once a couple where the wife said, I don't want his gifts. I don't want him to give me anything. Tell him to stop giving me gifts. So I said to her very clearly, I said, you're telling me to tell him to stop loving you. That's not what I said. He could love me, but not give me gifts. Wait, why? So usually the person has an issue with themselves. They're not at peace with themselves. But a person has to overcome that and have to realize what the meaning of it is. When Hashem gave us, not only did He give us, Hashem gave us extra love by letting us know what He gave us, that He created us in His fashion. And so do we have to know that it's not enough to give the gift, like the Talmud tells us, when it's not an issue of charity, then you're responsible to share with the other person what you did on their behalf. It's a way of promoting goodwill among Am Yisrael. Israel are loved because they are called sons before the omnipresent. The word ben has many meanings. The word son. In Hebrew, the word ben could mean continuation. The word ben could mean potential, like bar mitzvah. The potential to do mitzvot, ben mavet. We are called sons before the omnipresent. And this is a reflection of the fact that Hashem loved us. So what does that mean? In what ways are we sons to Hashem? I once had a friend, still have a friend, who's crazy. It's crazy. It's insane. Literally, it's insane. He could talk to you for a half hour explaining to you how the CIA has little cameras in every light that you buy, and they're watching you, and they see your every move. He's crazy. It's not his fault. He's crazy. But we're friends. And, it's not his fault, you know. Okay. I mean, when I say crazy, I mean crazy. He's so convinced that the CIA is against him that he goes to insane asylums and he signs people out under his responsibility. Literally. I mean, he goes to mental hospitals and he signs people into his own care. Like he took people out of mental hospitals, taking responsibility for them, and then telling them, you're okay. They're all just trying to get you convinced you're crazy. You're not. You're okay. No, I'm serious. I'm not joking. This is a true story. So he told me once that he used to walk early in the morning. He'd cross the Williamsburg Bridge, go into Williamsburg, and hear a shir at like 2, 3 in the morning. And then he'd go and help make minyanim. And then he'd cross the bridge back and help people make minyanim on the other side of the bridge. And then he'd go daven his own davening. Okay, that was his mitzvah. So he's once crossing the bridge and someone stops to give him a ride. So he gets into the car and the guy gives him a ride. And as the guy's driving, he tells him, do you believe in the Son of God? So he says, do I believe in the Son of God? Are you kidding? I'm the Son of God! So the guy looks at him and he says, what do you mean? He says, what do you believe in but it's me? And now you understand that this guy, I mean, he's crazy. What? So he says to him, he says to the driver, he says, why? Who do you believe in? You don't believe in me? Okay, by him, you never know. It's half-half. But the truth is, that's what the Pasuk says. Banim atem l'Hashem Elokechem. Hashem says, you're all my children. You're all my sons. So that means a I said, you know, I'm quoting him in class. Obviously, there's something right about him. So Panim Atem, we're all called sons to Hashem. And this is Hashem's special love to us. What's unique about a son? You help him go the right way. You care for him. And you care for him even when he did what was wrong. And when everyone else leaves because the kid threw up and suddenly everyone has to leave the party because, you know, they have something else to take care of, the mother stays behind and cleans up after her kid. And she still hugs him as he's throwing up and she still holds on to him. And a parent cares for her kid. And they see the good in the kid. There's a unique relationship. Everyone else sees what's wrong with them. The parent can see what's right with them. And you should know this is a fact. You know, if you ever have to deal with parents, the first thing you should do is start saying how wonderful the kid is. Because it doesn't matter what the kid did wrong, the parent sees what the kid did right. And if you want to talk to them, the first thing you have to show them is that you share with them that vision of what the kid did right. Well, you know what? It's the same thing in marriage. If you're going to make a list of what's wrong with your spouse, it won't take you a day to fill that list. And if you're going to enter marriage thinking, is this going to work or not? The answer is not. There is no spouse that could stand up to that trial. There was once a couple that separated and wanted to reunite. So Rabbi Feinstein said to them, he said, if you should reunite, and you guys should reunite with permanence and not as a trial. So they both said, what do you mean? We need a trial. So he said, I understand that you need a trial. But I also understand that if you're going to walk into it with the thought, this is a trial run, well, if it's a trial run, then you're keeping a scorecard. If you're keeping a scorecard, you're going to fill that very, very fast. Anytime our view is this going to work or not, the answer is going to be not. Because if I'm keeping an accounting, then there are many little trivial things that get on my nerves, and there's no other way. Because any two people that live together, if a malach came down and told you, he's right, and she's right, and you're both right for one another, this is the shidduch, this is the match made in heaven, you know what? They'd still have marital issues. The Talmud tells us there were over 10,000 people who had a child named Aharon. Because their marriage was on the brink of divorce until Aaron came into the picture and explained to them how to make their marriage work. So you ask yourself, this is the greatest generation that ever lived. This is the generation that received the Torah. 10,000 people had children named Aaron? 10,000 people were on the brink of divorce? I tell this to every couple that comes to me and tells me they're on the verge of divorce. I tell them there were 10,000 like you and they still built a good house together. Don't be so quick to assume it can't work just because you're holding by a get. So what? The fact that a couple thinks they're on the brink of divorce, that's normal. Don't get scared by that. Now figure out how to make it work. The chiba, the love of Am Yisrael, is that Hashem is willing to call them their son, his son. The Talmud tells us that when it says Mordechai took Esther as his daughter, it means he took her as a wife. And the Talmud is teaching us a certain relationship. So people sometimes tell me, I didn't want to marry a child. I didn't want to marry a daughter. I wanted to marry a partner, a wife. Great, she'll be your partner. But your love for her has to be like for your daughter. A love that's willing to see what's good and overlook what's bad, see the good in the person and see how to build with the person. There was once a couple that one of the spouses, the husband, had tremendous issues. Really tremendous issues. To the point where even I, who my job is to help a couple work things out, I stood there and I was like, I don't know how I can tell them this is going to work. So I called a top psychologist, and psychologist to have experience with, because you should know, some psychologists are quick to say, okay, I've diagnosed his problems, her problems, this can't work, just get divorced. You got to know who you're talking to. And I asked him what he thinks. I in 5 minutes I outlined the case to him, without names obviously, and I asked him what he thinks. And he said to me a very interesting line. He said to me, he's not hurting her, he just has major issues. You know what? I've yet to see a couple where the husband had major issues that couldn't work it out if the wife was supportive. If she is willing to work with him on working it out and willing to believe in him that he will work it out, then we have what to talk about. If she's not willing to work with him, she's not willing to believe in his capacity to work it out, then you're right, then the issues are insurmountable. And I don't think he meant one way. I think it goes both ways. We have to know how to help a spouse, but we have to know that it's not a crutch, the fact that the Torah says a wife is like a daughter, and sometimes a wife could view the husband like a son. It's a perspective. It's a perspective that I'm willing to see the good in the other person. And it's a choice. Because we always have a choice. How am I going to view my spouse? And a person can say, I'm just being realistic. Yeah, well then that's not good. Then it's not going to work. What do you mean? What I mean is that we all have our faults, and the closer you are to a person, the more they get magnified, and the less you want to make it work. I know what's wrong with them. Why should I marry a person like that? And the true answer is that no other couple is going to tell you, but the truth is every couple has their major issues that they have to work out, and that each side knows the other side's weaknesses, and it's a choice. And the final point, the Mishnah says, Hashem loved us so much that he gave us the tool with which he created the world. That cherished tool, which is the Torah. It's very interesting. One of the things that keeps frustrating people is that they feel like, why doesn't she know what I want? Why doesn't he understand what I want? I've said it a million times. I've alluded to it a million times. And one of the things that very often happens is that if you'll tell someone else exactly what happened, if you could only quote it verbatim, that other person will share with you how your spouse misunderstood what you said, how you didn't really stress what was important to you. What do you mean? Ask him to clean the floor. Doesn't he know he has to open the doors and clean behind the doors? Doesn't he know that I want him to move some furniture in order to clean? Doesn't he understand how you're supposed to clean a floor? The answer is no. He doesn't. He does it his way. You do it your way. Fine. There are a million things like that. When Hashem gave us the Torah, he gave us a way of life. He didn't just put us on planet Earth and say, make it work. He said, here, I'll tell you. I'll tell you exactly how to make it work. I'll tell you how it's going to be good for you. And the truth is that we don't have a guidebook to marriage. Many people wrote many different things, and there are a lot of excellent works out there. Someone asked me recently why I don't write everything we discuss in class. And I said, because I think there's a lot of good stuff out there. I don't think I say anything that other people aren't saying too. Just there are a lot of good books. What do you need another book? I don't know if I'd write a good one, but there are a lot of books out there. But at the end of the day, there is no guidebook to this marriage. Every marriage has its own nuances. Every person has their own nuances. And if we really want to be considerate of our spouses, then we have to take time to listen to them and hear them and share with them that they have to help and explain to us what they want. Men have an easier time telling women what they want. The Talmud says that one of the curses of the woman is that when it comes to intimacy, she doesn't request it overtly. A wife might want to be intimate, she'll allude to it in 10 different ways, but she won't say it overtly. My teachers taught me that it's not only about intimacy, although the Talmud was talking about intimacy, it's about everything. Women talk in riddles, which to them make a lot of sense, because they understand one another's insinuations. We don't, us men. So the wording of the Talmud is Gevel tova bepeh, ish tova bepeh, a man asks overtly, v'isha tovat baleh, and a woman asks in her heart. She says things, she hints, and she's dying for you to understand. So that's why, because the nature of the man is to be more explicit in what he wants, I trust you guys will share with your spouses what you want. But women aren't that way. And that's why it's important to share with them that in order for things to work, they should spell it out. And I recommend that couples take at least once a month to sit down on a date, go out to a hotel lobby and buy a drink. And just, you don't have to go out to a fancy date, but just sit down with a pen and paper and look over their schedule and look over what they could do together to make their schedule better, to make their lives better. All too often, we throw at one another points as the day goes on, and then we get frustrated. Didn't I tell you this morning? Didn't I tell you this yesterday? Haven't I told you this a million times? If a couple knows that they will have that once a month to vent, and not in a bad way, but they'll have a once a month where they could talk, especially in the beginning, then they could really work things out. The problem is that we mention things on the fly. As everything's hustling and bustling during the day or during the week, we say things. And if we could take time, like someone once said, it's cheaper to go out once a month or once a week than to go to a therapist. You're saving money by going out. So if you could go out, it's better. I say a hotel lobby because very often when couples go out, they don't want to ruin the atmosphere. So they don't want to bring up everything else and then they never end up working it out. So okay, go out once and also go to a hotel lobby. Go somewhere where it's clear. You're not going out and understand one another. When a couple talks and shares with one another. And again, I stress that men have to know how to compliment directly and listen and listen and listen and hear, and then hopefully we'll get to hear it.